Welcome to Christian Medical and Dental Association's chapel. We trust this message will encourage your walk with the Lord.
I don't know how many of you like history. You don't have to raise your hands if you do or if you don't. History can kind of be dry sometimes, but when you actually walk in paths that people walked and sit in churches where they sat, like Pam and I had the opportunity in the Reformation tour in October to do, so that's still fresh in my mind. But CMDA history isn't like Reformation history. It wasn't that long ago. And a hero of mine, probably the number one reason that I said yes to Dave and Jean to come here and leave Kenya was because of Dr. Bob Schindler. Bob was president of CMS, became CMDS in the 80s because of the number of dental members growing. And Bob and his wife Marion were missionaries in Liberia and built the original Elwha Hospital. And Bob felt led and called to write our first 70 years history. And the strength of this book is from the 1980s, I think, because Bob lived through the 80s as president. Did you help on this project, Barbara? Yeah, good. So it can be a little dry, but I walked with Bob through some of these things, at least in the 90s when I finally got to meet him and became his partner in surgery in Michigan. But Bob writes in this book, Following the Great Physician, just as he was walking out the president's door and becoming the past president, following the 1987 National Convention in New Orleans when Dr. Schindler had turned the president's gavel over to Dr. Mayo Gilson, as Schindler walked out of the hotel, Dr. Roberto Rodriguez, president of Christian Medical Society of Mexico and friend of many, challenged him with a new thought. He said, "Your doctors have so much to share in professional knowledge and skill. There are so many around the world who could benefit from their teaching." His challenge was, why doesn't the Christian Medical, now CMDA, USA, send your members to teach national physicians and dentists in their own countries? Bob recalls, we talked more about this and concurred that it was a great idea and that we would both pray about this. Without reading the rest of the story, the board decided in 1988 to set up a task force, and then in 1991, this new commission called COIMEA, the Commission on International Medical Education Abroad, was birthed. And so we're really at 35 years of what we now call Medical Education International. So, you know, you can't get away from the influence that really great men and women of God have in your life. And Bob Schindler, for me, was that influence. He was, when I joined him in 93, he was all about COIMEA. He couldn't wait to go on the next COIMEA or MEI trip to do education. And the influence still, John Pierce, and I'm sure Julie's online, to this day for Mongolia and Macedonia, some of these countries where we still have ministry today, got started there in the first couple of years of COIMEA. And so those long-term relationships have been so impactful. Well, I had the opportunity to get on board with a almost 30-year-old ministry in Cuba. And ever since I came to CMDA, Gene, Cuba has been on my mind. I've really been intrigued. And now that I've gone there, I mean, since I was 20 years old, I've been going back and forth to the dark continent, former dark continent. And it is hard to get to Africa, right, Trish? It's pretty hard to get there. It is doggone easy to get to Cuba. I mean, it's like you get on the plane and like 4 hours, 5 hours later, you're in Havana. It's just amazing how easy it is to get to this communist country just south of the Florida Keys. So I wanted to share just briefly my experience in going to Cuba. And all of us were given by the Baptist Medical Fellowship this hat, Cuba para Cristo, or Cuba for Christ. So I'm calling my presentation Cuba for Christ. Now, my neighbor on Mia Drive here in Bristol is the one who first told me, probably most of you, every time I share this fact with people, they're like, oh, you didn't know that? Cuba is the old car capital of the world because the embargo that happened in the 60s, 1963, the year I was born is when Fidel Castro came into power. And so the cars, they're all from the 1950s and 40s. It's amazing. And I got on ChatGPT, and what Cuba has done is that they have figured out how to manufacture parts. The engines and all what's underneath is fairly contemporary stuff. But the outside, they've had to manufacture parts to keep these going. So it is the old car capital, and they are everywhere, including in Revolution Square. In fact, this is one of the things they're most proud about, that in spite of the embargo, they have survived, Castro and company, and have kept these cars going. So they're not all of them look as beautiful as these that are on Revolution Square, and that you can hop in, and for a few pesos, you can take a ride in a 1954 Cadillac. It is a beautiful country in many respects. In fact, I'm going to show you a map of Cuba here in a second, but this was the view, this picture on the left, this was the view from my hotel room in Pinar del Rio, the most western province of Cuba, and it looked like a view from the movie Jurassic Park. I mean, it really could be. And actually, the picture on the right, that could have been a view from my home in Kenya, in the highlands of southwest Kenya at Temuco Hospital. So a step back in time, one of the days we were heading back to the hotel from one of our teaching sessions at the hospital, there in the regional hospital, we saw a man behind an old-fashioned plow with an oxen pulling the plow, just like from Bible times. So the revolution happened in 1959, and then I think in 1963 it became the communist country that it is today, and everywhere that you go, you see Castro. Now, he's long gone. There in the middle is Chavez, who was the president of Venezuela with Castro. Everywhere you go, no colorful bulletin boards, billboards, colorful billboards. It's just billboards about the revolution everywhere you go in Havana and throughout the countryside to remind everyone of why they are the way they are. So some interesting facts about Cuban doctors. Cuba reportedly has about 9.43 physicians per 1,000 people. The physician-to-population ratio, this ratio is among the highest in the world. We saw medical students everywhere. They import medical students from all over the Caribbean, Central, South America, come to Cuba. It was one of Fidel Castro's highest priorities, was to start medical schools and start training. The thing is, it's very egalitarian. And so nobody gets paid more than anybody else, in theory. And so Cuban doctors make $30 a month. They cannot survive on $30 a month. So almost all of them are entrepreneurs and they start a business. Since around 2010, the Cuban government has allowed citizens to have private business. And so one of our hosts on the side, an ENT surgeon who makes $30 a month, has an ice cream shop, and he's starting a cycling class for friends and those in the neighborhood who want to stay fit. And so he's imported some exercise bikes. But we literally were in restaurants being served by general surgeons. We were served by surgeons as our waiters because they cannot make enough money doing surgery. A lot of doctors, a lot of nurses running around. Per the Cuban government, the number one export of Cuba is doctors. Greater than 22,000 Cuban doctors are working in other countries on contract with the Cuban government this year. And I'm told about 90% of the income goes to the Cuban government and 10% to the doctor. So population of Cuba has dropped in the last few years from 11 million down to about 9 million. So there's a general drop in the population. Cuba accepts medical students from all over the Caribbean, Central, and South America, as I mentioned. So here's Cuba, and the green circle there on the left of the picture is the region that we spent most of our time in, Havana, and then a several-hour drive to the west in Pinar del Rio, its most western province. You see, we're very familiar with the name Guantanamo and Guantanamo Bay. Actually, one of our team members, who's a good friend of mine, Daryl White from Texas, was in the Army and was there, or in the Navy, and there on the Naval Base in Guantanamo Bay. So he has some fond memories from being on the other side of the island. And I asked him, why does the U.S. have this naval base in this particular place? And Dr. White told me that just off of Guantanamo Bay is one of the deepest places on the earth for the ocean. And so submarines and other sort of exercises can be done just off of Guantanamo Bay. Here are three of our team members wearing our hats, newly christened with Cuba for Christ. Family medicine resident, Dr. Barrage there on the left, and Jaina, who is a hospital chaplain, full-time hospital chaplain and wife to the urologist on the team, and then Christina Snyder, who's a nursing student. Everywhere we went in Cuba, we were in 5 or 6 different hospitals over the course of 5 days. Everywhere we went, the man there on the far left was highly, highly, highly revered. And I think one of the major take-homes, bringing back to CMDA, that I noticed, that I've learned from this experience, is that we are on the shoulders of incredible men and women of God in these countries who have faithfully served their own people. I mean, think about being a hematologist, oncologist like Victor Gonzalez is for 30 years, making $30 a month, serving his own people. Probably could have had many opportunities to leave Cuba over the years, Misty, I'm guessing, but has not left and served his people. So these are government hospitals. These are not mission hospitals. They're not private hospitals. These are Cuban government hospitals. Everywhere he goes, the red carpet is rolled out, and we are welcomed with open arms, great hospitality, smiles, because of the respect that Victor and the Baptist Medical Fellowship has in the country of Cuba. So this was the largest provincial hospital that we were in. Right in the center, in the fancy gray sport coat, is an anesthesiologist who's the medical director of the hospital, very proud of his hospital and his staff. So on our team, 3 ENT and surgeons. There's a big emphasis on especially sinus surgery by Dr. Rod Schlosser, who's gone 7, 8, 9 times to Cuba. We had a pediatric surgeon that I spent a lot of time with, Dr. Chris Snyder from Tampa, a urologist, a general surgeon myself, 1 family physician, a dermatology PA who travels every year, probably 6 or 7 months of the year, to give lectures in many large dermatology conferences, has written book chapters, a great teacher, Douglas. Family medicine resident, medical student, nursing student, hospital chaplain, 2 other physician spouses, and then, interestingly enough, a Mercedes-Benz dealer owner from Atlanta. His name's Larry, and there's Larry. Now, Larry is a good friend. Why is a Mercedes-Benz dealer on this team? I mean, what kind of medical education does he have to offer? Well, he's a very, very devout follower of Christ and a dear friend of Rod Schlosser, and so has been following Rod, maybe even supporting Rod over the years in these trips to Cuba, and has always wanted to go. So Rod invited him along to this biggest ever team to Cuba. And Larry just courageous. Here he is in front of a group of doctors and spouses and students and so forth, and kind of trembling as he gave us our devotional on our first day, and he shared, "I had no idea what God would do this week in Cuba as a Mercedes dealer." But God's designs are so amazing. I mean, what God has in mind for each one of us, his kids, is to do good things for us. So dozens and dozens and dozens of trips over decades to Cuba, they have never, ever, ever, ever rented vans from Mercedes until this trip. And so we were with a Mercedes dealer inside these beautiful new Mercedes vans. And Larry has connections. He's at a massive Mercedes dealer in Atlanta, and has set up now Victor and the drivers with the ability to easily get parts for these Mercedes vans. So Larry couldn't believe it. It was a powerful testimony to him that God's got this, and he had called him to be a part of our team. So this reminded me of being back in Kenya and showing up at a government hospital as a medical director and long-term missionary in Kenya. Government officials pulled together and are very proud of what they have to offer. This woman is a family physician who is the provincial head for Pinar del Rio, and that's our team sitting around her boardroom there in the provincial hospital. And as I said, here's Victor Gonzalez, and everywhere he went, smiles. The picture in the middle, the doctor in the white coat is the medical director. This is a smaller, kind of a district-level hospital. Most of the staff in this hospital are followers of Christ. Over the course of the years, the contacts with Baptist Medical Fellowship and the efforts of outreach into Cuba to go to a government hospital, this reminded me of a very Christian nation that I came from after 20 years of Kenya, is to find these Christians, and I'll show you a picture in a minute of one of their physicians in the ICU, definitely a Christ follower. So what is the MEI teaching model? Hands-on workshops, teaching in the operating room, small group presentations, lecture hall presentations, we did many of those, bedside teaching and rounds with the national team. But there's also a very significant emphasis on spiritual impact. We handed out over 500 Gideon Bibles. You'll see Doug, the Durham PA there, stacking up with the white Bibles, which are for healthcare professionals from the Gideons. Victor has been a Gideon for close to 40 or 50 years, so he has access to New Testaments, which we handed out left and right to people. But the image on the left, we were just pulled into a restaurant for lunch in Havana, and two of the non-medical spouses looked out and saw a mom with her two small children sitting there, and we had some downtime. And so with Mario, who's a pediatric surgery resident and the heir apparent to take over from Victor Gonzalez as head of the Baptist Medical Fellowship, a young man walked out and interpreted for them. And these three of our team shared their faith and love of Christ with a mom. I took this picture because I wanted the mom to kind of remain anonymous, but two small children, and shared their faith, prayed with her, and she was so delighted by this chance interaction with our team. And then sharing with at pediatric hospitals, adult hospitals, handing out Bibles, praying with patients, testimonies during presentations. So I've shared this with a lot of people. Communist country, Cuba. In a room with as many people as you are here today, full of healthcare professionals, whether they're physicians, dentists, nurses, administrators, and I have the freedom in a government hospital in a communist country to put up a slide and say, here's my testimony, John 3:16 and 17, that we serve a missionary God who sent his son to die for us. It's in Spanish, so they can read it. And I look out, and there's no stone faces, there's no frustration, there are smiles. And it doesn't matter whether I'm in Havana or in this provincial hospital, there are smiles across the room. There's an acceptance of the Bible as the Word of God among these communist people. I could never, 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 never do that in America. I could not go to a university and not have frowns and have people shut the door and not allow me to come back. We are more anti-God in this country than in the anti-God communist regime of Cuba. It's just amazing. Again, that's not happening because necessarily the government or the people of Cuba are so open to Christianity. It's because of Victor Gonzalez and the Baptist Medical Fellowship and how much they trust, the government trusts them, that we're not there as part of the CIA or any sort of operation to overturn or have a revolution, but we're there to care for people in Jesus' name. Just incredible. And then the picture in the bottom right there, is from that smaller district hospital. The ICU doctor in that hospital, a Cuban, is a Christ follower, and a patient there with renal failure, very sick in the ICU. And our team gathered around the patient, shared their testimony through the doctor, the Cuban doctor who speaks Spanish. And then a very simple invitation for this patient to receive Christ as Savior, simple presentation of the gospel. And then the Cuban doctor, not our team members, the Cuban doctor did the final interaction conversation and prayed with this patient in the ICU to accept Christ as his Savior. I don't know if he's alive today. He was very sick in the ICU. But it's just an incredible opportunity. That's not how the Cuba team started, I think, Misty, in the beginning, or maybe even when you were there years ago, but that you would be free to pray or hand out Bibles. But over time, again, the Ministry of Health has come to trust these efforts as not being anti-government or anti-Cuba, but of great benefit for the Cuban people. Psalm 145 is my psalm this year, and so I'm always looking for applications and ways to apply it. Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. His greatness no one can fathom. One generation commends your works to another. They tell of your mighty acts. These are two young people who were of great help to us. Mario is a first-year pediatric surgery resident on the left. And on the right is Daviana, who is a fourth-year medical student and the daughter of one of the ENT surgeons that Rod has been working with over the years. And both are highly committed to Cuba and to the Baptist Medical Fellowship, and Mario already sees himself as being the next person to take the mantle from Victor Gonzalez. Oh, and I was going to mention, there is a virus that's very hard for me to say. I practiced it multiple times. I still can't say it. It starts with a CH, but it's a dengue mosquito-borne vector, a mosquito virus that's going all across Cuba. And almost every one of the Cubans who helped us last week either had it at that time or had just had it, and it leaves a headache. It's just a little bit like malaria, but leaves them with very swollen and painful joints. And so Dabiana, who's there on the right, actually had it the weekend that we arrived and spent the whole week in pain, but still joyfully serving us and doing a fantastic job translating for us in every single setting that we went. And this is our team. This is our culminating meeting with the Baptist Medical Fellowship there in Havana. I had a chance to give a devotional, a challenge. We had probably 80 people present on a Friday afternoon. I was impressed that the Cuban physicians and their spouses came out on a Friday afternoon to join our team of 15. So this is just one idea that I was sharing just a few minutes ago with John Pierce. And we had a meeting yesterday with Rod Schlosser, together with Chris Snyder, the pediatric surgeon from Tampa. Point-of-care ultrasound is something we feel has great potential because it was done at the same Mark Muhlenberg, who was there with you, those of you who were in Louisville a couple weekends ago doing ultrasound training. Mark loves to do training, has a connection to relatively inexpensive ultrasound units that are state-of-the-art. And so we had our first meeting yesterday on Zoom to talk about a year from now, going back to Havana and teaching in a couple, three hospitals, point-of-care ultrasound, and also giving testimony. And there's a few pictures of Mark there doing training and the ultrasound probes. It's applicable to many different specialties, including primary care. Portable, sturdy, and less expensive equipment. These units per unit are about $6,000, I learned yesterday. Doesn't require any infrastructure, and these units are adaptable to an Android or Apple platform, especially an iPad. So it really is incredible portable technology. So as I finish, this is what I shared with the group on Friday afternoon. This is one of the first topics that I shared in chapel at CMDA back in 2016 or 17, I believe. And it was at that time I was kind of putting this concept together of second chair leadership. And of course, I had a great role model in Gene Rudd when I came to CMDA on what a very influential and effective second chair looks like. And as a second chair, we're all second chairs in one way or another, and Jesus Christ was the ultimate second chair to God the Father. But my first chairs in 2015, 2016, when I came to CMDA and left Kenya, I had a CEO at Temuc Hospital. I was his second chair. I had a president of the Friends of Temuc Association, WGM country director. I was his assistant. Our pastor, I was the head elder in our church at Temuc, and so was serving him. Russ White was our chief of surgery, was my first chair in the Department of Surgery. And then, of course, Dave Stevens came on as executive vice president. So I had a lot of second chair positions, and that's why it was prominent on my mind. So why did I bring it up to this group in Cuba, and why am I bringing it up now? Because this is all about trust and developing trust. And what I saw in a relationship between Rod Schlosser and Victor Gonzalez is very powerful. And that is, Victor knows that Rod is there as a second chair leader. Rod is there to make Victor successful, not to ride in on his white horse as the American who's the know-it-all, who has so much to offer, but as a humble second chair there to help the Baptist Medical Fellowship be successful. So my theme for this second chair topic in development of this trust cycle is from Proverbs 3, 3, and 4. Solomon said, "Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man." So in this cycle, investment of love and faithfulness by a second chair leader to a first chair, and over time, developing trust. And because of the trust that my first chair, when I came to CMDA, that would be Dave Stevens. As Dave trusted me over time, my loyalty to him grew and grew and grew. And I wanted to invest more in that relationship. And the relationship became stronger. And of course, Dave and Gene were together for 25 years. An incredible, deep level of trust. And Solomon says that favor and a good name come out of that. And so, as I said, there's Victor in the first chair and Rod. And in all of our relationships, whether long-term or short-term relationships, we need to be there to serve those who are full-time, who are national leaders in those countries. And I just saw this so beautifully illustrated in Cuba. So from this long-term relationship comes trust, favor, and a good name, and long-term cross-cultural ministry success. Just to shout out this diagram, Mandy, back when she worked with Margie Sheely, put this graphic together for me. So here is CMDA, Lord, send us. This is a statue that overlooks downtown Havana, a statue of Jesus that was built many years ago. I'm not exactly sure when, but send us.